6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Let's get it. Welcome to the Dear Son Show. We have meaningful conversations about life through the lens of fatherhood. It's for fathers, those with fathers, and the fatherless, so nobody's left out. These are the conversations I want my son to access as he grows through life into manhood, so no topics are off limits. I'm your only host today, D. Johns, but we got the amazing TJ Davidson on the show. How you feeling, my brother?
Feeling great. I hope you're feeling good.
I'm feeling fantastic, man. How's your week going?
We were just talking about it, but crazy week, but like, you know, it's the life of having, you know, four kids and two dogs and just family stuff going on every single weekend, you know?
You definitely got me beat with the dogs. I can't make that sacrifice just yet. They asking, but I can't do it, man. Talk about your household. You got four of them. Four little humans.
Yeah, four kids, three boys. My oldest is 13. And then I have an 11-year-old, I have a 9-year-old, and my daughter is 7. And just, just been, you know, grinding. And actually, my daughter is 6. So I don't know why I said that. My daughter is 6.
After 3, man, you get a pass.
Well, you know what? Like it's crazy because, you know, just seeing like how they've grown and advanced, you know, I always feel like my daughter has been like more mature than what, you know, she has, you know, like just her age and her maturity. It always amazes me. So yeah.
Completely get it, man. I got 5.
Yeah.
Slightly further down the road than you today. They are 21, 19, 17, 11, and 10. So we had a reset.
Yeah.
And, we had to remember how to parent again.
21 and 10 is crazy. 21 and 10 is a big
nuts. Complete nuts. I blame my wife. She has a different feeling, but you know how that goes.
Yeah. You know
how that goes. So the wild thing is, and it's, I'm laughing now, when you were talking about like how do we get connected, and my story in coming to contact with your content is, my family and I, we moved overseas in 2015 to Dubai. I had a job opportunity. So I went over there to manage a supply chain office in Dubai. And my wife, it didn't make sense for her to work anymore. We just had number 5. Like number 5 was 6 months when they all came over. So my wife was going into stay-at-home mom mode more permanently. And I kept hearing Jaden and Chance from my kids.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, the thing was, they actually have cousins of the same name. So it never really, I just kept hearing them say it all, you know, every once in a while. And I'm like, my wife started to vlog as her thing. Like she was, you know, she had to find her hobby.
Yeah.
And when they came over, they were pulling up your show.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, oh, these are the kids. You're not actually talking about your cousins. You're talking about a YouTube family. So that's how I came into contact with y'all then. And then I found out y'all from, you know, 757. I was like, oh, it's all in.
You know, it's good to hear that, because like, you know, when you're in the middle of like creating stuff like that, I feel like we didn't, you know, have any concept or idea of like what, you know, what people were seeing from our content. And right. Again, we initially started to create that content just because we wanted to capture like the memories, you know, from our family and the kids and them growing up. And so it's interesting to see how like that was being played in other people's homes. And
yeah.
And so like, you know, that it's always, that's always interesting to me. It always like, you know, always, you know, piqued my curiosity. And like, that's really cool that like, one, we were able to connect based off of that and find like similarities within each other. I think I remember like, it probably might've been like a message or something that you reached out to me. And then
yeah,
like we just kind of hit it off, exchanged numbers and kind of kept in contact throughout the years. I mean, that probably had to have been like years ago where we connected, had to you be. Know?
Had to be, yep.
Yeah.
So how did y'all get into it initially? I know you say you want to capture the stories, but like, what was the, was it only that? Cause I picked up on a part of your story in terms of, like your career through that.
Initially, like if you think about like the way YouTube has grown over the years, initially there was not any money involved in it, you know? So when my wife and I were in college and we were, you know, she was creating videos and I was creating videos, I wasn't making a dime doing any of that stuff. Like I was just right. doing it because I like to create and I like, you know, the opportunity to like, you know, create something and then share it with the world. And so there was no like concept of like money. And as we kind of, you know, grew in that, we, you know, created our own voices and we created our own, you know, platforms. And then the kind of natural progression of that was, okay, like, you know, previously I was creating stuff about, you know, college life and in my dorm room. And then my wife was creating stuff about her beauty makeup and, you know, her outfit and what she was wearing. Cause she worked at, you know, a fashion store. And so that was just kind of our world. And then our world started to be, you know, started to change into, having kids and having a family. And so naturally we just continued to create what was being reflected in our lives. Right. And so, it's like, okay, well let's start creating content like this of what we're experiencing. And, you know, that I think that like desire to continue to create definitely came from just like our natural will and want to do it. But then once we got into, having a family, having a household and, you know, going into corporate world, that's when it's like, well, maybe there's an opportunity here to create a lifestyle that allows us to just do this, you know, for our work and for our, you know, living.
So we're both from the 757, man. What was early life like for you in 757?
Man, you know, 757, man, is a very interesting place, man. You know, I grew up in sports. I grew up around the sports life, playing for AAU teams, playing for my local high school, you know, just ingrained in that sports life and ingrained in the, you know, the idea of making it, you know, in sports. And, but I also had, you know, parents who wanted to make sure I was well-rounded, you know? So, you know, they put me in, you know, band. I played the drums, I played the piano. They put me in summer camps where, you know, I first picked up my first camera. And then, you know, also in every sport that, you know, I wanted to try, track, football, basketball. I did those throughout high school and throughout, you know, my younger years. And so, you know, that's my childhood was just like, you know, kind of like how my children's childhood is right now, just full of athletics, full of different activities, full of trying to, you know, create a well-rounded, you know, environment for my kids.
So what high school?
So I went to Mintsville High School in Newport News. Yeah. What about you?
Hampton High, man.
Okay. 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 Yeah.
Several years older than you, so I don't think we crossed paths there at all.
You're a crabber.
Yeah. Class of 97, man.
What about you? What about your childhood in in the Hampton Roads area?
My childhood was primarily centered around church.
Mm-hmm.
And sports wasn't a big deal in the house. I had some opportunities to play, you know, rec league and play for my church. But one of the challenges, the way I grew up, from a religious perspective, was my family was Seventh-day Adventists.
Okay.
So sunset Friday to sunset Saturday, I couldn't do any activities.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually rubbed me wrong for a long time and kind of created, kind of started the rift with me and my pops. It's nothing salacious that came out of it. It was just, I was a kid that didn't like the rules and I was angry that I couldn't take advantage of those opportunities. So I love basketball. You can find me in the playground. Play with a lot of the guys that, you know, people would recognize.
Yeah.
Didn't actually have the opportunity directly. So I thought. So the thing was, my mom was like, hey, you can play all the other times except for this window. And me, I'm like, what is that? How does that even make sense?
So yeah. Yeah.
Probably shame on me for not even trying, but, you know, I felt some kind of way about it. So it kind of limited my opportunities. And I spent my first 8 grades, so first through 8th, in private schools, smaller church schools, in and around Hampton Roads. And 9th grade is when I went to Hampton. So I went to high school all through, I went to public school all through high school. And that was like a culture shock. It's like, man, black people everywhere. Because my schools were, you know, some of the schools that I went to had like 50 people in the total school. And the biggest one may have had 400 or 500, but that was K through 12. I went to Mary Atkins and Hampton Christian. I don't know if you're familiar with Hampton Christian, but that was kind of my life, man. So I had a well-rounded experience, with the exception of in my opinion, of sports, because there was only so much exposure you can get playing in the leagues that I was playing in, and playing the competition I was playing. But I definitely had a love for it. Continued playing basketball, kind of rec league. After I graduated, went to college, went to ODU, took the scenic route to graduate. You know, first semester after high school, it was a freedom shock for me, and I didn't go to class. I didn't do too much. And the very next semester, I was back at home working full time. Ended up working at the shipyard and realized that that's not the life that I really desired. So I had to work full time, go to school full time. And I think that's what I needed, because it made more sense. It was more meaningful to me to do it that way. It was a harder way, but yeah, that's the I guess that's the 2-minute version of my life in the 7x7 coming into adulthood.
Now when you say that though, because I grew up in the church too, and my church was non-denominational, but my dad was, heavy in the church. He was a deacon. He's a minister now. Mm-hmm. So I was, I was there 2 or 3 times a week,
Yeah.
And so, definitely was a priority in our lives growing up. Yes, my question towards you would be like, how has that changed now? Are you still, practicing the same thing with yourself and your family now?
I'm not. And I came to a point, something about having a family, and I imagine you relate to this, is understanding what you did out of repetition and tradition versus relationship with God. And this wasn't intended to be a Bible study by any stretch, but our lives are our lives. So I went through a period of trying to understand the why behind the what, mm-hmm. and focus more on getting to understand and getting to know God for myself, developing a relationship, relying on the faith that I had, not my parents' faith and their prayers. Once I had a family, and it's all interconnected to what life was throwing at me, right? So it was corporate world, trying to make it, trying to be successful. I took some wild opportunities. I went to Iraq for a year, left my family for a year to kind of get ahead financially, or catch up and get ahead financially. And I found myself in a place where I was just detached from God, not a like a purposeful walking away from, but when you get out of like there's some value in having habits and tradition. And when you get away from that and realize that your life is kind of flailing, that's what kind of put me back on the track to figure out who God is and how I relate to him and lead a family. So it's an ongoing journey.
Yeah, I mean, I think for us growing up, having that kind of forced on us, you know, lead you kind of away from it for a period of time, and God will let you go, you know. Yeah. And that's the thing that, you know, I realized, you know, in my life, God will let you go, allow you to experience those things. And then, you know, when you're ready to come back, you come back.
Right.
And I think when you do come back, you come back with the knowledge of like, you know, it's this is much harder without him, you know.
Much.
And so, much. You know, I think that's a journey that, you know, parents are trying to help you avoid that journey, right? By giving you like, hey, this is what you should do. These are the rules. This is why you should do it. But as a child, I mean, the natural rebellion, you know, comes in from that of like, hey, like I need to figure this out on my own.
Like I completely get it, man. It's like, and again, a lot of it makes sense becoming a parent. Like even the distance that I put and I take responsibility for, like I had a great dad, no reason to like nothing abusive or anything. Like I just didn't like the set of rules. And it took me becoming a parent and understanding that you got to have a standard. Like you got to have a hard and fast. And then if something challenges that legitimately requires it to be negotiated, look at it. But in my house, this is how it works. Right. Yep. And especially having multiple children, I was the youngest of two. And then I was the one that questioned more than my older sister. So it wasn't like I was setting the tone or an example for children behind me. But now, like my how we treat my oldest impacts number five, because, yes, you know, he's watching and starting to understand what he can and can't do, what's not acceptable, and how things are different for him or than the other children. So all of it matters, man. I get it.
It does. It does. It's very important for us to understand too, you know, what our life was like. Like I had, you know, my parents were great. You know, my mom, my dad were, you know, they were doing what they felt like was right for me. Now, right, it's still up to us as their children to find like the meaning in that. Like it is what my father was doing like good for me. You know, it's debatable, but
right,
did my parent do what they felt was right with the information and the knowledge that they have to do it? And yeah, to me, that's the most important thing, is like understanding like what it's like. And as parents now, we understand what it's like, you know, or what it was like from our parents. And with that knowledge, we can, you know, try to be better parents, but we would never be perfect parents.
Yeah. How has that impacted you in terms of, I would suggest that each generation gets or should get a little bit more open and understanding to and with their children. How does your upbringing impact the way that you parent now, especially having, how many siblings did you have growing up? How different is your household dynamic than it was for you growing up?
So I think it's drastically different. The difference, you know, it was just me and my sister, our sister and I, and we kind of like had a very close bond, right? Where it was like us against the world. And so I was very happy to have, you know, a sister like her. We're 2 days apart. Our birthdays are 2 years and 2 days apart. So, you know, she's born on the 20th. I'm born on the 18th of March. And so like we had our birthdays together. We had, you know, everything was kind of together. And so we kind of, you know, had that close bond. And I think my childhood kind of reflects like how I parent today, and in ways that like I felt like my life was very controlled as a child. And a lot of the decisions were made for me when I wanted to make my own decisions.
Right.
And I think the way I parent my kids now is I allow them to make decisions and choices for themselves.
Right.
But I also give them, you know, guidance and tell them and have the conversation with them about their decisions and how they make them. And, you know, I want you to make your own decisions, but I also want you to learn how to make good decisions. Right.
Sure.
And so instead of someone just, you know, making a decision for you, let me teach you what it's like to make a good decision. What does that look like? And how should you go about that process of making that decision? And so a part of that is allowing my kids to fail, allowing my kids to try things, fail at them, or try things and not like them and make a new decision, right? And but one thing I don't allow my kids to do, which is also what my parents did not allow me to do, is, you know, you may start something and you may not like it after you start it, but you're not going to stop. Gotcha. And so I treat my kids the same way. You're not going to stop until the season is over, or the, you know, you're going to go through the entire experience and experience it from beginning to end, and then make a decision of whether you want to do it again or not. Right. But we're not going to start doing something and then stop it, and then start something new and then stop it again. And so that's really kind of the foundation of like my relationship with my kids and how I kind of parent them through life, not, you know, choosing decisions for them, but more so allowing them to learn the process of making those decisions and what the repercussions of those decisions are.
And that makes perfect sense. My oldest son is graduating from high school this year, and our relationship has definitely matured over time. But the one thing that clicked for him probably middle of 11th grade, definitely showing up this year in senior year, is that, son, you got to do this for you. Like, your grades are for you. I know what you're capable of. I know what your aptitude is, but you getting all A's doesn't do anything for me specifically, right? These are, you have to want it for you, because I don't want my children to go through life pleasing me and not understanding the value of a thing to them or what they actually want to be. So he's starting to get it, and he understands the impact of not getting it sooner. Cause for me, the contrast for me is, if you brought a D home in my house, in my parents' house, you know, you were going to get a whipping, you were going to get on punishment. It was going to be a whole thing. I'm not that type of parent, because I'm not promoting do less or don't, you know, perform to your highest standard. But again, it has to be like, you have to desire it for you, because if something external needs to drive you in life, you're always going to need that external thing. And those external things can change based on relationship, based on, you know, physically not being here on earth, those kind of things. So I try to reason and rationalize with my children more than what I experienced. I was still on the tail end of be seen, not heard as a child. So, but we live and we learn, man. I always have to caveat with, I have great parents. They parented me to the best of their ability based on what they had seen, how they felt they were being led by God. And it's never a bash. I think it's my duty to improve each generation. So that's what we focus on.
I just to go back on that just a little bit, what you said about like the kids wanting it, you know, I experienced that now a lot of times, you know, in sports, because I coach and I'm involved with the youth a lot. One thing I try to stress to a lot of the parents is that, like, I understand that you want your kid to want it. Like, you want your kid to have the internal desire to do the thing, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, though, it comes down to us as parents showing them what that looks like. And so, you know, you'll see other kids who are doing that thing and your kid is not doing that thing. And it's like, see, that person has the desire to do it and they're doing it on their own. And it's, you know, but I guarantee majority of those kids have some type of push early on that allowed them to understand, like, that, you know, this is doing it halfway and this is doing it 100%. And having that example of what that looks like a lot of times leads kids to understand what that looks like. So I take my, like if I take my own, my son, for example, in sports and basketball, he thought he was great at basketball. Like, oh, like, yeah, I'm great. You know, I'm better than all my peers. Right. But then when I take him and I put him in a different environment where the peers are operating at a higher level and operating with, you know, at full intensity. Now he sees like, oh, there's another level of intensity that is required to go to the next level or to do the thing at the max level. And so until they see that and experience what that looks like, a lot of times they really just don't know what it looks like to be dedicated, you know, even when it's down to like our food and the way we eat. You know, my son's 13 years old and he's like, you know, dad, I want a meal prep too. Right. And it's like, if he hadn't seen me and my wife meal prepping and creating meals for ourselves to live a healthy lifestyle, then he wouldn't be asking me to meal prep, you know, because sure, he hadn't experienced or seen that in his world. So a lot of times, like it really does come down to like a kid being exposed to the level of like desire and the level of commitment and seeing what that looks like in order for them to understand what they need to do in their own life.
Yeah, that's good, man. I think that's an appropriate disclaimer, is that we owe it to our kids to display greatness before them so that they have some kind of baseline or barometer of understanding and measuring. You know, that's good.
Yeah.
One thing that I know we have in common, and we kind of briefly touched on it in another conversation, was our corporate journey. Right. Not necessarily identical or similar in nature of what we did, but outcomes of going through that life, providing for family, and then that life abruptly changing. Well, yep. Abruptly might be an aggressive statement, but changing nonetheless. You care to discuss that?
Yeah. I think I got laid off. Did you get laid off or was it like, yeah.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. You know, that's the other part about, you know, how we probably both grew up. You know, we were told, you know, as a child, we have to go to college. That was not an option for our generation.
Right.
What is either go to college, like, or, you know, get out of my house, you know?
Yeah.
And and so
that's, I hope we got time to talk about that too.
Yeah.
But that's.
Yeah. So that was our world. It's like you have to go to college, and to be honest with you, we were you know, thrusted into this environment of like, we have to make a choice. We have to do this thing. And you pick the lesser of the evils, right? It's like, okay, well, let me at least, you know, major in something that gives me some sort of money, but also gives me the opportunity to create. So for me, that was mechanical engineering. And so I was able to create things and I was able to use my mind. I love mathematics. And so I went off into the
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tantandia products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Workforce, got my internship, started on this career path, got experience from one job, moved to the next job, get to my third job, and I'm looking around me and I'm seeing people who had been there for 20 and 30 years. And I'm like, you have been sitting in that same desk for 20 and 30 years. And it was honestly something that, you know, really turned me off to the corporate world. It's like, I do not want to be that person. And I then started to like really make me convicted about the YouTube world. It's like, I have to continue to create. I have to continue to create because this could be, you know, one of the things that allows me to leave this world of this corporate world. And it ended up kind of doing it itself. I mean, I got laid off from my engineering position on a random Tuesday. And luckily we were creating something outside of that because that was our main income, for a while. You know, my wife, you know, had two kids, now three at home, and she was working on YouTube and I was helping her and assisting her with doing that. Creating videos and editing videos, and we were kind of upended, and my world was upended as well. It's because I identified as a mechanical engineer. You know, I went to school, absolutely. I went to college, and I worked that for years, and then all of a sudden, you know, that was gone.
Key word for me is identify with identity, period. And that's what it was for me, just kind of layering on the conversation we've had to date, you know, I mean, to this point. Like I wasn't the athlete. I had friends of athletes, right? I had friends that excelled, went on to D1s, some went to the pros. So I was always looking for my thing that gave me a conversation to have with them. Not that there was a qualification to be their friend or anything like that, but just, you know, it's the healthy competition of a circle of friends excelling. So I got good in corporate. I got promoted, you know, salary was great. Then opportunities kept coming. And that's what took us overseas. And my family was able to live in the UAE. We were in Dubai for 3 years. And that was, you know, that was a very cool experience. And, you know, we came back, my position had elevated again, and I made it to the top rung of the ladder in my department. And it wasn't as fulfilling as I thought it would be. Not that I wanted it to go away, but I realized that I was pursuing this thing and I got there. And all I really, what I wasn't prepared for was what came with it. like deciding people's future that were once my peers or a position that I had been in. And companies don't care. You know, I know there was, you talked about what was instilled in us, you know, from my parents' generation, and there was a plan, a workable plan to get a job with the company, work there 30, 40 years and retire. That's gone in my generation, right? I know there are pockets where people can, like the first place that my real job was at the shipyard in Newport News. And I know, you know, just like I know that there's people that I went to school with that are coming up on 30 years, and that's great. But those are limited and limiting opportunities that are available. So I found myself introducing myself as that thing, especially when I made it to the executive level, right? I thought it was important for people to know that about me because maybe they would take me more serious. And when that was taken away, so mine was through acquisition. So I'd been through us acquiring other companies. I was in the lead when our company went public. Then we got bought out by another company, and I could see the writing on the wall. And honestly, I was ready for it in words, but not in action. So like you said, you were building something on the side. I had gotten so comfortable with what happened every 2 weeks in my bank account that I just was just kind of coasting.
Yeah.
So that was one piece of it, not preparing for the tornado. And then also all my eggs were in the basket of focus on work, and not necessarily showing up the way I needed to at home. Yeah. So it was a whole lot to unravel at once, because it's not as if my family thought less of me. I thought what they thought of me was tied to my success at work. So when that went away, I had a problem. Like I was in my head about, man, how can I lead them? And this big piece of my identity is gone.
I think there's a dynamic there that, I mean, I think we don't talk about enough, that, you know, being in a position of leadership, like having the position to lead your family financially, with stability and things like that is a position where it allows you to also kind of overlook some of the things that you don't, you know, need to look at when you don't have that position, right?
Sure.
So, you know, having the funds that came along with the consistency of that career allowed you to overlook some of the little things that, you know, really build the relationship, right? And so when that is stripped away from you, now only thing we have now is the meaningful relationship, right? Like I can't just go and buy you gifts now, like on a right. whim, you know. I can't just go and like make these decisions that I want to make just because, right? And it pulls that away from us, and we find value in that and not necessarily value in that genuine connection, right?
Yeah.
And so there's a huge change in that happens within a man's mind, that we need to talk about more, because identifying with the thing that you do and not really understanding who you are, and that's where I'm kind of getting at, is like, because I have this position and I am working this job, you know, I'm introducing myself as TJ, the mechanical engineer, right? Oh yeah, I'm a mechanical engineer. Because a lot of times people say, hey, what do you do? You know, you know, my name is TJ Davidson, I'm a mechanical engineer, and that sounds great to people. Oh wow, like what do you do? Oh, I build heat exchangers and tanks and design those and you know, blah, 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 right? And it's so interesting. Now, when you strip all of that away, like, who are you? And what do you do now? And that, the stripping away of that allows us to have the opportunity to understand who we really are outside of that. But while you have that, you can overlook like the figuring out of who you are, because you don't need to, right? I can just, right. I'm getting my money and I can shake people's hands and tell them what I do. And then now that you can't do that, who are you outside of that? And I feel like, you know, having career, having, you know, money, having funds, being able to support other people just by, you know, with monetary value allows men and women to escape themselves and sure. not have to deal with what is behind that title and that label or that, you know, degree.
What would you say is the most valuable lesson that came out of it for you?
You know, I think I always had a natural desire to not want to be in corporate. Mm-hmm. And so for me, when I was in those situations, I always was looking to, you know, to be around my family. Like I always was looking like this is cool, but I really want to be at home right now. Right, I really right. want to be holding my son. And I think I naturally recognized that this thing is taking 8-9 hours out of my day. And I'm missing like milestones that are happening in my children's lives.
Yeah.
And I can't get that back. But this thing, I can get back. I can always come back and get a job, you know, later on in life. I can't go back and get my child's, you know, childhood back. Yeah. You know, that's something that happens once and it doesn't happen again. So I think it taught me, like, losing the position though, I think that taught me something. And for me, that was that the only reliability is in my skills and the things that I can provide for myself. And if I'm relying on anything outside of that, then it's not to be trusted. And it's not it's not something that I can, you know, sit and be comfortable with.
Sure.
And I think like what you said is like, we used to have these positions where people could just get a job and then they could hold on to that job for a long period of time. But now we're understanding more that these companies and these corporations, they don't care about that. They really care about their bottom line. And if you don't fit within that bottom line, you're gone.
Absolutely. I've had the unfortunate experience of having to make those decisions, and it never became something I enjoy, which if there's a silver lining at all, is that, because I saw where people did enjoy it, where it was laughs and jokes when you're deciding how a family is going to eat. Mm. What's really interesting, I think, in our dynamics is the difference in the stage of life that it happened.
Yeah.
Because you said you were focusing on, you know, you want to be home holding your son. I was so well past all of that and having missed all of those, a lot of those moments because of corporate, that I think my bitterness was, you know, a little bit more to the nth degree. Not that you would have been bitter, but just, I think that settled in on me that I had really given this thing 20 years of my life.
Yeah.
And like I always knew, because I saw my dad get laid off. Me and my dad worked at the same company when I was a designer, doing some design work for naval vessels as I was working my way through school. And I got the job because he worked there. You know, he referred me. And I think he was at the time coming up on 24 or 25 years.
Yeah.
And on a random day, like you said, he came in and they literally said, your position is a luxury we can no longer afford. You can leave today and get your 2 weeks pay, or you can work the next 2 weeks and get your 2 weeks pay. And then with, you know, whatever vacation or everything else he had. But that was my introduction. And I was finishing up school, about to enter the workforce, working at the same company. So I always had a bitter taste in my mouth. But I think somewhere along the path of success and reaching levels that my parents hadn't reached, I disconnected from a lot of people because I just didn't think they could understand like my journey. It was almost like a guilt.
Yeah.
Like, man, how dare you complain about this, you know, and you're seemingly doing so well. So,
yeah,
I think wherever it happens, you got to take inventory of your life at that point and pivot, which clearly you've done. So, you know, I applaud that. And anybody that's family first, is all right with me. I'm at the point that if my family can't come, don't invite me. I'm cool.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think the other part it has to be said is the transition period, right?
Sure. Oh,
and yeah. So, you know, we've talked about this before, right? There's a transition period that happens that, you know, of course I wanted to go back to work, but I felt like it was important for me to, like, once I felt that feeling of like, what am I now? I knew I didn't want to have that feeling again. So for me, I'm like, let me sit with this for a little while and understand what I'm feeling. The good thing is that my wife was flourishing because I made the sacrifice beforehand of saying, hey, babe, like, you don't need to work right now. I'm gonna do my mechanical engineering thing, and I'm gonna drive an hour and a half to work every day and an hour and a half back. And I'm gonna help you edit. I'm gonna help you do it, everything you need to do to get this YouTube thing like up and running. And so she took off of work. You know, we had the two kids. I mean, we had Jaden and Chance, and it was going to cost her paycheck to have, you know, daycare. So I'm like, we're just taking that money and just throwing it straight to them. How about you just not work and you spend time with the kids and you sit here and we figure this thing out on how we can make this thing work. And we ended up making it work. And I mean, her income started to skyrocket because we were dedicating a lot of time towards that.
Yep.
But that afforded me the transition period for the opportunity to sit with myself and figure out who I am, because I had poured into her and she had poured into the thing and the thing got big. That afforded me the opportunity to sit with myself and figure things out. And that was a process that, I mean, of course, it's still ongoing, but it allowed me the opportunity to know me and and spend time with my kids, you know?
You know, one thing that I pulled from that you didn't overtly state, but it resonates with me because it sounds like I spent a lot more time immature than you did. If you were ever immature, especially as a father and a husband, but just the communication, like having that conversation with your wife about, here's what I believe. Are you on board? And then her being on board and committing and putting in work to afford you that opportunity, though it may not have been in that vein when you started, but it was there when you needed it.
Yeah.
And because I wasn't a great communicator, you know, I had my days. It's a day where I'm good. And some days I still revert back to my old ways. But I took on a lot more frustration being the provider and almost, you know, spent some time resenting my wife and my family because of the burden that I was bearing. And it wasn't their place to be resented. It was because I knew that I hadn't been as communicative about what I see and how I actually feel about work. Like, I never actually talked about how work was stressing me out. And it really was. So, you know, great salary is cool, but it was really taking a toll on me, but I would just stomach it.
Yeah.
And it led to some resentment, some misplaced resentment and anger. And I'm saying this to hopefully that one or two guys that are listening may take note of, you know, how important it is to have open and honest communication with your spouse and with your family, starting with your spouse, of course.
Completely.
Recognizing when you're getting to that point of this thing is affecting me beyond my control and not doing anything about it. And that's why I fell short. So a lot of tough lessons learned.
That is a tough lesson. And so one thing that I've learned in that is that a lot of resentment comes from the lack of communicating what the common goal is, right? And so, you know, in relationships, we're two people trying to operate as one. And when we feel as though the partner is not operating in that oneness, we grow resentment. But a lot of that resentment comes from the lack of communication of that, right? So when you know, me and my partner are my wife are making a decision, and you know, we have different goals, it becomes hard for us to see the same, you know, outcome. And
right,
like even with our kids, right? My wife and I, we've talked over the years and we've communicated to each other that, hey, like right now in our life, we are agreeing to put everything we have and pour everything we have into our children. So that may mean that we may have to make sacrifices to each other, to each other's time, to each other's, so that we can meet that common goal, right? And some people will be like, hey, you know, well, you got to put you and your wife first. I do agree with that. I think the first thing that we need to do, though, is communicate what our common goal is. If you and I both agree that this is our common goal, there right. will be no resentment, right? And a lot of the resentment, you know, comes from the miscommunication. You believe that this thing is the most important thing, and I believe that this thing is the most important thing. And with that disconnection, we grow resentment for the other person. And so until we communicate with each other about what that is, what the common goal is, we will continue to grow apart and continue to grow resentment for one another. You don't spend enough time with me, and you spend too much time with the kids. But if we both agree on what the common goal is, right? If you both agree that, hey, babe, I really want to get this promotion. I'm going to be, you know, grinding it at work, and I won't be spending a lot of time with the kids, but I want to make sure that I get this promotion so that I can, you know, afford a lifestyle that we want to live, right? And if you and her agree on that, right, she has no resentment about you being at work all the time, right? But a lot of couples don't communicate and come to a common agreement of like, hey, babe, I really want to do this. Is that okay with you?
Yeah.
Right. And if it's okay with her, then you have that ability to go off and do that with, you know, that common goal in mind, knowing that you and your partner are at one with that decision.
Resentment is definitely the quiet killer.
Yeah.
And I think many men, let me just speak for me because I don't have the data, think part of my assumption of being the leader was figuring things out on my own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And I mistook not worrying my wife for not including my wife.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Later to find out that all she really wanted to be was included. like, let me know that this thing is important to you, because you can really go through life not knowing what's important to the other person.
Yes. Yeah.
Not knowing how they feel about their day, how they feel about their activities and responsibilities. And the longer you don't have that conversation, the harder that conversation gets. And then you start to settle into that resentment. And now you're frustrated that you got to go to work every day, and she's frustrated that she has to take care of a home, if that's what you agree on. I don't want to put that out there as what has to be. But that's something that we learned late, man. And I'm glad. Like, I love having conversations with people that are 10 years younger than me and 10 years older than me, mm-hmm. right? Because, like, it gives me perspective that I need to stay in tune with. And then I talk to my kids, of course, but it's, I think if I had these conversations when I was 10 years into my marriage, mm-hmm. and now I'm approaching 20, maybe I would have, something would have clicked a little bit earlier, and we would have avoided, you know, some of our challenges. So, no, that's the purpose of my platform, is to show people where I bump my head, and, you know, men come on and tell their stories. I think it's crucial.
It's very important. And I think like to tell you a little bit more on how I got to that point, to where I'm like understanding, like, okay, like, this is where the resentment is coming from. I literally, you know, I've been afforded the opportunity to deep dive and get a chance to understand myself. And part of that, you know, comes from me asking those questions. Hey, like, I'm feeling a little bit resentment towards my wife. Why am I feeling that resentment? You know, where is it coming from? Like, why do I feel like this? And I really want to know, like, how can I rid myself of this feeling? And through, like, asking myself those questions, you begin to get a little bit closer understanding of, like, who you are and what you're feeling and why you're feeling it. We as men have to have that dialogue with ourselves and ask ourselves those questions. Why am I feeling this way? And get to the real root of the problem and the issue, and not just kind of, well, I'm feeling this way because of her, and or yeah. I'm feeling this way because of that. And you're not really, like, getting to the root cause, because there's nothing wrong with having a career. There's nothing wrong with pursuing this passion. There is something wrong with pursuing a passion and a career without having that other person in your life in the forefront of that conversation, right?
Sure.
Are you going to continue to do life without that person? No. If you're going to continue to do life with that person, then you need to include them in every bit and piece of not only how you're feeling, but what you're doing.
And I think sometimes as men, as tough, as macho as we want to present ourselves, we're scared of those answers.
Yeah.
So the questions you were asking yourself, like, that's to ask yourself and to answer honestly is a thing.
Yeah.
It's a feat. And a lot of people don't walk down that path of understanding what's wrong with me. Like you mm-hmm. said, the easier you can cast off on somebody else, it makes you feel good. But also realize that if somebody else has that kind of effect on you, that's essentially you handing your power over.
Exactly.
Of your emotions.
So, exactly. Exactly.
Man, this is, bro, I hope this isn't the last time we do this, for sure.
No, we got to do this again, man. We got to do this again. I think this is long overdue. I know we had these conversations before, but, you know, never together like this. And I feel like, you know, the more we can open up and talk about this stuff, the more we can kind of tackle these issues together and hopefully, you know, allow other people to tackle those issues as well.
So I look forward to sitting down someday in person. I'm trying to be back in Virginia, as I mentioned, at some point this summer.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully we can coordinate that, bro.
For sure, man. We can do something in person. You know, we can find something, you know, find something accommodated that we can talk about. So, yeah, man. Do you have a closing or anything that you typically do for you?
Yeah, I always shout out my wife, man. My wife, lovekeishaj.com. You can buy her children's book, Chocolate Princess, Volume 1. Great reviews, very well written, very well illustrated. I would suggest it for young women of color, your young scholars, 5 to 15. I'm going to send you one, bro. Now that I think about it, I'm going to probably get your updated info and send one to you for your baby girl. But my wife is dope, man. And this year I am vowing to bring her back home because she went back to work and she is enjoying life less. I'll just say that.
Yeah. So
that's my goal, man. But definitely appreciate you, bro.
Months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.